Who is there for heroes of the families left behind when a service member or first responder dies or is catastrophically injured in the line of duty? Who helps our country's homeless veterans? And who helps our nation to never forget 9/11? Let me tell you who: the Tunnel to Towers Foundation. The foundation's Gold Star, Fallen First Responder, Smart Home, and Homeless Veteran programs comprise their In the Line of Duty programs. They're all dedicated to honoring our nation's heroes and their families. The foundation's Never Forget programs engage people in 9/11 remembrance across America. Over 80 runs, walks, and climbs a year. Dozens of golf outings. And the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute is educating kids kindergarten through 12th grade to help our nation keep its vow to never forget. More than 95 cents of every dollar you donate to Tunnel to Towers goes to its programs. Never forget the sacrifices of our country's greatest heroes. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T2T.org.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Buck Sexton Show, a deep dive on all things China right now. And for that, we have the perfect guest, Gordon Chang. He's the author of The Coming Collapse of China, as well as The Great U.S.-China Tech War. He's a great follow on Twitter as well, Gordon G. Chang. Gordon, my friend, good to have you back, sir. Good to see you.
Thank you so much, Buck. This will be fun.
So the biggest news right now with regard to China is, and something that came up over the weekend, how worried should we be about Chinese military support to Russia in the Ukraine war? And I want to dive into what that could look like. But what do you see it as right now, Gordon?
China has been supplying military assistance from the very beginning of this war, Buck, but China has picked up the pace. Now, the Breaking Defense website reports that almost every day, an Antonov An-124, which is the biggest cargo plane in the world, leaves Zhengzhou, which is in central China, and it goes to Russia. It turns off its transponder when it leaves. I mean, it's carrying ammunition and other high consumption rate items. This follows reports that China's been selling drones to the Wagner Group for use in Ukraine. And from the get-go in this war, China has been feeding location data to the Russians. The Ukrainian drone operators were using products made in China. That means that China knew the location of the Ukrainians. China was sending that over to Russia, and then Russia was taking out the Ukrainians. That's military assistance. Now, we have a series of statements from Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, and others, saying, oh, we think China is contemplating supplying lethal assistance to Russia. Well, they've already been doing so for quite some time. And I think that they owe us an explanation why they think that all of these reports are untrue, because obviously we are hearing information contradicting what the administration is publicly telling the world and the American people.
Is there a concern, Gordon? I mean, as you just laid out, there's already military support that has been going from day one from China to Russia. But is it possible in your mind that there could be an escalation even on top of that from Xi Jinping to provide either just greater amounts of what's already there or perhaps more advanced weaponry or even Chinese training on certain specific systems?
There always can be a ramp up in assistance. And one of the explanations that I have, just guessing, because all I'm doing is speculating, is that the administration doesn't want to acknowledge the lethal assistance because it's still trying to work with China to keep that assistance to the bare minimum. And maybe people in the administration think that if they publicly confront China, that Beijing will increase what it sends over to the Russians. I don't know. That's not a good strategy. It's not working. And I think that it just misunderstands the Chinese way of thinking. We have a lot of policies, Buck, that sound good to the ear, like they should work. But for decades, we've been applying these policies and we now have disastrous results, which means obviously we got to try something new because what we've been doing ain't working.
What is the Chinese interest in Ukraine and in the Ukraine-Russia conflict? I mean, what are they hoping to achieve as their strategic objectives?
You know, again, we have to speculate because I think that ultimately what they're doing is counterproductive. But obviously they see themselves on the same page with Vladimir Putin. Xi Jinping and Putin, they view the world in the same terms. They identify the same enemy, which is us. And I think Xi Jinping finds Putin to be very useful because he's willing to go out and really put us on the back foot. You know, the more that we expend resources in Ukraine, the fewer resources we have to defend our friends and allies in East Asia. So that's part of it as well. We're being bled and we're being distracted. Now, I think we need to be in Ukraine because the best way to deter China over Taiwan, for instance, is to make sure that Putin loses in Ukraine. But the point is, we are being bled. And the Chinese, I think, enjoy watching this.
What is your response to the assessments that are out there now from people that there is a growing Russia, China, Iran axis? You know, it harkens back to the axis of evil speech of the Bush administration many years ago with Iraq, Iran, and North Korea. Now it's much bigger, much more important countries that people are tying together. What do you make of that?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think that we have to add North Korea and perhaps add a country like Algeria. So you put together a lot of these countries and the world's dividing into camps. President Biden doesn't want to acknowledge that, but it's plain to see. And if you don't acknowledge reality, you can't deal with reality. So the world is dividing and it is a Cold War. And it's, I think, far more dangerous period than the Cold War. You know, people say, 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, the most dangerous moment in history. I could argue and say 1961, the Checkpoint Charlie crisis in Berlin was perhaps even more dangerous. But the point is, we know from the archives book that neither Khrushchev nor Kennedy were willing to use nuclear weapons. We don't know that about Vladimir Putin. We don't even know that about Xi Jinping. And I think that makes this the most dangerous moment in history. And because you've got that large camp on the other side, they might be willing to use nukes. It's just, we're not comprehending the possibilities.
Are there areas of friction between Putin and Xi that U.S. policy or just U.S. action could exploit? I mean, how can you make them less cozy together so they're less of a threat to the world order as we know it?
I think that it's theoretically possible, but as a practical matter, it is not. These two just believe that they find advantage in each other's arms. And I don't think that there is anything as a practical matter we can do to separate them, except to perhaps bring down Russia. We do that. We drive it out of Ukraine. We end that partnership. And, you know, people will say, that's extraordinarily dangerous. And I say, saying something is dangerous is not a meaningful objection, because out of three decades of truly misguided Russia policy and China policy, we have created an extremely perilous situation. There are no safe options. And the most dangerous option of all is continuing with the policies that created this disaster in the first place. So we're going to have to think about the world in very different terms and realize that it is perilous.
Gordon, I'm going to ask you about China-Taiwan here in just a second. But first, from our sponsor, MyPillow. MyPillow is an amazing company because of everybody listening to this. You know that these are great products. I actually just ordered myself some more of the new MyPillows as well as some Giza Dream sheets over the weekend. The sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza. They're ultra soft and breathable, but extremely durable. And right now, the Giza Dream Sheets are at the lowest price ever. Sheets come in as low as $29.99 with promo code BUCK. I know, because like I said, I just used my own promo code and bought some last night. So that's promo code BUCK when you go to MyPillow.com. Get the Giza Dream Sheets. There's also the mattress topper, the body pillow, all kinds of products that you can get. And when you use the promo code BUCK, you get a deal on everything. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the Radio Listener Special Square to check out the flash sale on the Giza Dream Sheets. Remember, MyPillow products come with a 10-year warranty, and they're also given a 60-day money-back guarantee. So check out MyPillow.com, radio listener special square. Click on that. Use promo code BUCK. You'll get great limited-time specials. But the Giza Dream sheets, $29.99. Get yourself some new sheets. You probably need some new sheets at home. MyPillow.com, promo code B-U-C-K. Gordon, China, Taiwan. Let's start with this. Is China, after seeing the situation in Ukraine, less likely to invade in, we'll say, a five-year timetable because they see all the trouble that Ukraine, that Russia has had in Ukraine, or more likely because they feel the U.S. is distracted and doesn't have the stomach for a fight in addition on the Eastern Front, so to speak?
I think that, and this is just guessing, but I think China is less deterred than it was before. Now, William Burns, the CIA director, a couple days ago actually said that China is more deterred seeing Russia's problems in Ukraine. And the Chinese, we know, are looking very closely at Russia's experience. But you got to remember, you know, the happy talk in Washington is the heroic resistance of the Ukrainian people have convinced the Chinese not to invade Taiwan because they worry about similar resistance. And, you know, I think there's something to that. But we got to look at the rest of the situation, and that is, there was a failure of deterrence in 2022. We saw the coalition that was arrayed against Russia, the United States, the 27 nations of the European Union, and Great Britain, had an economy 25.1 times larger than Russia's in 2021. And yet we failed to stop the Russian invasion. That is... I perhaps the biggest failure of deterrence since the Second World War. And I think China's seen that. I think that reinforces the notion in Chinese minds that the, as Xi Jinping's favorite phrase is, the East is rising and the West is declining. And Xi has actually thought for a very long time that the United States is in terminal decline. So he sees the failure of deterrence. He sees the United States not still being deterred by Russia because we're not supplying the assistance that Ukraine needs to win. And he can see that the threats to use nuclear weapons have prevented the West from actually coming to the aid of Ukraine in the way that we need to. So you put all that together, and I think on balance, the Chinese believe that they've got a bigger green light to invade.
How formidable, Gordon, are the Taiwanese defense forces in the face of a possible Chinese full-scale invasion? And also, what would it take to get... I want to ask you about Japan as well, but let's just start with, how does Taiwan stack up against those initial critical days of Chinese forces in an amphibious landing, crossing the straits and invading?
Taiwan doesn't stack up very well because it has the wrong types of weapons. And that's the fault of some Taiwan general officers who asked to buy the wrong things. And it's also the fault of the Pentagon for pushing on Taiwan some of the wrong weapons. Taiwan needs cruise missiles, and it also needs submarines. And we have not been willing to sell them submarines. We've been slow walking arms sales, as Representative Gallagher said after he just returned from Taiwan. So, you know, Ukraine needs F-16s, but I don't think Taiwan needs F-16s because there's going to be no airfield left in Taiwan, you know, after the first couple hours of a Chinese bombardment. We're not going to have any airfields left in the region either, but that's another story. The point is that Taiwan can maybe stop the Chinese for a little while, but they're going to need help from their friends.
Gordon, you raised something I think is important for people to know. There may be this conception of a Chinese invasion of Taiwan looks like some you know, obviously massive aerial strikes beforehand to try to soften up the target, the island of Taiwan, and then naval flotilla, amphibious landing craft, and they just try to occupy and overrun the forces. But you seem to indicate it could be a lot broader than that. What does, if you were to envision, and I know, look, the Pentagon does war gaming all the time, whether they're right or wrong, they don't know until the bullets start flying, right? If you were war gaming what a Chinese invasion of Taiwan would look like, what happens in those first, we'll call those first 72 hours?
First of all, I think that maybe for 6 months, we don't know that an invasion has started, because a Chinese invasion of Taiwan may not start with war in space or, you know, a massive aerial bombardment of Taiwan. It could start with this, the dissemination of a pathogen in Taiwan, you know, just weaken Taiwan's ability to defend itself with the disease. You know, we got a lot of smart American war planners who say, oh, don't worry about all this. We know, you know, we'll have months of notice of an invasion. I'm not sure that that's the case, because, you know, we got American war planners who assume that Chinese war planners think like American war planners. And so I don't know if that's the case. I think that we could very well have this long period. It's sort of prepping the battlefield, so to speak. We could have sabotage events throughout Taiwan, which people may not know are sabotage. You know, derailments, chemical fires, all the rest of it. The stuff we see in the U.S., for instance. So the first moments of a war may not be evident for quite some time. But when it really goes kinetic, I think we're going to see a lot of our assets in space taken down. We'll see a bombardment of Okinawa and Guam. We'll see a naval blockade, which includes sovereign Japanese islands. Because remember, the island of Yonaguni is actually south of Taipei. And for a Chinese invasion to be successful, they've got to have a blockade. For a blockade to be successful, it's got to include Yonaguni and other Japanese islands. So this gets really ugly really fast. And one other thing, Buck. Sorry for going on. But one other thing.
No, go on.
The first kinetic element of a Chinese attack could be the use of tactical nuclear weapons. I mean, everyone says how hard it is to have a cross-straits invasion. You'd have to have combined land, air, sea operations, which the Chinese have never done in their history. How do you avoid that? Well, you use tactical nukes and you force, in the Chinese mind, you force everyone to back off because they don't want to get nuked as well.
Do you think there's a chance that they would also, are there any U.S. assets in the region that they would go for with the idea that while it may be U.S. territory, it's not quite, you know, it's not quite the 50 states? Do you think they might hit Guam? Do you think they might try to go after some U.S. Pacific assets?
Absolutely. And Okinawa, they got to take out Okinawa. They cannot afford to have the large U.S. military presence there left intact. So if you're going to go after Guam, you might as well go after American bases in Japan. And you probably will have the North Koreans engage in some sort of provocative activity to draw off the United States.
You could foresee, or at least you could find plausible, we'll put it that way, Gordon. I'm not, you know, no one can predict the future, and that's very clear, but you know, it is important to understand what the possibilities are in order to plan for them. You could foresee a situation where a Chinese invasion of Taiwan also coincides with North Korean, military action, maybe not an invasion, but military action of some kind, strikes, artillery strikes, etc., against South Korea.
Absolutely. Because what better way to divert the United States? There could be all sorts of things that are occurring. And also it could be sabotage by Chinese agents in the U.S., which I think would probably occur pretty much at the same time. So this is not going to be limited.
I want to ask you about Chinese influence in the United States, Gordon, in just a second. But first up here, if you're a T-Mobile subscriber out there, they're investigating a data breach that exposed the sensitive personal information of 37 million customers. Right after the new year, cyber hackers grab this stuff without notice. It could include customer names, emails, billing addresses, and phone numbers. If exploited, cyber criminals can use this information to commit online identity theft. So how will you know about this? Well, you probably won't till it's too late unless you have LifeLock. LifeLock has online identity theft protection that monitors the web 24/7 for irregular activities and new account openings. If they see unusual activity in your name and you're a LifeLock customer, you'll get an alert. That comes via text, phone call, email, whatever it takes to get your information, your attention in the moment. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. If you do become a victim of identity theft, a dedicated U.S.-based LifeLock restoration specialist will work with you to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but it's easy to help protect yourself with LifeLock. I've been using them for years, and they've come through for me before. I had to work with a restoration specialist, made all my problems go away in terms of identity theft. Join now, save up to 25% off your first year with promo code BUCK at LifeLock.com. So that's LifeLock.com. Use promo code BUCK for 25% off or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Again, that phone number is 1-800-LIFELOCK. Gordon, there's a lot of attention that people pay to Chinese influence in this country with regard to a few things. Hollywood and the way that it's clear the media industrial complex here, the entertainment complex in America, doesn't want to offend China. That includes occasionally professional athletes, the NBA notably, not wanting to upset Beijing. And then some tie-in to Hunter Biden, the son of the president of the United States, getting a whole lot of money from Chinese Communist Party-backed business interests in China. I wanted you to sort of lay out for everyone the scope of how much, from the elites on down, what kind of control and influence operation does China have in the U.S.?
China for decades has been trying to buy off elements of the American society, and they've been extremely successful, as you've been talking about. On November 28th, 2020, after Joe Biden was elected president, but before he took office, a Chinese academic, Di Dongsheng, gave a live stream lecture in Shanghai, got a lot of play throughout China. And Di talked about how China was controlling outcomes at the highest levels of the American political system. He said that China was able to get what it wanted up until Trump. It mentioned that the Chinese levers of influence during the Trump administration were broken, but how China was looking forward to exercising control after Biden took office. And when Dee talked about Hunter Biden, everybody in the live audience in Shanghai was snickering. So you can see what the Chinese think. Also, Dee said there was no American politician who could resist China, and every American could be bought. Now, I'm not saying that what Dee's assessment was correct. I actually think it wasn't. But the point is, that's what the Chinese think. And that shows you how pervasive Chinese influence in the United States is. And by the way, those levers of influence that Dee talked about, that he was exercising both before and would exercise after Trump, two things: Wall Street and Henry Kissinger. Just one other thing. The thing about Eric Swalwell was the Chinese, and I'm not saying that he was treacherous or anything, because I don't know. And I also believe that being targeted by China's Ministry of State Security is not a sin, because that means everybody in Congress would be a sinner. But the point is that the Chinese first contacted Swalwell, not when he was on the House Intelligence Committee, which would obviously be of great importance for China. They first contacted him when he was on the city council of Dublin City, California. That means that they have not just one Swalwell. That means they must have hundreds or thousands of Swalwells. That shows you how pervasive their operations are.
So they're going for influence operations, not just obviously at the White House level, but as you point out, all the way down. And then on the corporate side, because that's an area where, you know, whether it's Disney or Paramount Pictures or National Basketball Association, clearly companies have a sensitivity about to say Chinese interest, Chinese Communist Party dogma, right? I mean, it's not, they're not worried about offending the man on the street, so to speak, in Beijing. They don't want to upset the powers that be in China and lose access to those markets. How much money is at stake in things like that? I mean, what would happen to some of these companies if Xi Jinping said, no, not you, you're out?
Well, we're already starting to see that, Buck, because Xi Jinping has, in fact, been saying that. But, you know, obviously the NBA would lose its entire China market. The Hollywood studios, they already losing, you know, a large part of the market because Beijing has been promoting local films, making it difficult for foreign films to be shown. But, you know, Hollywood still is very much on board with China. Fortunately, the movie Maverick, Top Gun, has sort of convinced Hollywood that you don't necessarily need the Chinese market. But this is a question of Xi Jinping forcing American companies and other companies out of China.
So was Maverick not allowed in China, Gordon? I didn't know that. They didn't allow that movie in?
Yeah, I don't think it was allowed in. Remember, the issue, though, was the patches on
right, the Taiwan
Maverick's
patch on the jacket. Right, yeah, yeah.
The Taiwan message there. So really what Hollywood was saying was, look, we don't care. We're going to do this. You know, will you let your film in or not? But American films have not done that well in China recently because Beijing has really started to put the clamps down on them. So, yeah, they still have a market. It's still considered to be important in Hollywood, but I think it'll become less important as Beijing seeks to really control what the Chinese people see to a greater extent than they've done in the past.
I want to come in just a second here and ask you about what's going on inside of China with in terms of stability, political stability, the economy, Hong Kong. We'll get to that in just a second. But a word from our sponsor here, Tunnel to Towers Foundation. Born from the tragedy of 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since. The foundation honors fallen and severely injured heroes and their families with mortgage-free homes. This year alone, hundreds of Gold Star and fallen first responder families with young children and our nation's most severely injured veterans and first responders are receiving homes. More than 500 homeless veterans received housing and services last year, and more than 1,500 are receiving housing and services this year. This coming Memorial Day, all of the brave men and women lost since 9/11 in the War on Terror are having their names read aloud in a Tunnel to Towers ceremony in our nation's capital. Through the Tunnel to Towers 9/11 Institute, the foundation is educating kids in kindergarten through 12th grade about our nation's darkest day. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Please help America to never forget its greatest heroes. Join me in donating $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at t2t.org. That's t2t.org. Gordon, let's start with Hong Kong. Remember when there were, I know you do, but for our audience, there were all of those protests and even some American flags being waved. There was all this media attention on the threat of Hong Kong being essentially consumed by the Chinese Communist Party, losing its special status for all intents and purposes. What ended up happening there? What's the status of Hong Kong and the freedoms that it was supposed to have today?
Yeah, just for some background, Beijing promised 50 years of a high degree of autonomy for Hong Kong in the one country, two systems formula, starting from July 1st, 1997, when Britain, as they say, handed over Hong Kong to the People's Republic. This was pursuant to a treaty. China has clearly violated that treaty. It's now running Hong Kong lock, stock, and barrel, and it has done so since basically 2020. You were referring to the big protests of 2019. Xi Jinping decided that he was going to take over Hong Kong. They did that with their national security law, which was basically called the end of law in Hong Kong. And right now, Hong Kong, in many respects, is actually less free than the mainland itself. Certainly, it's more dangerous for foreigners because we don't know exactly where the line is. Yeah, Hong Kong has been smothered by Beijing.
And also, we had mentioned before, we brought in North Korea into the conversation. We don't hear that much about North Korea these days. I mean, we didn't during the Trump administration because of the outreach, the discussion, conversations between Kim Jong Un and then President Donald Trump. What is North Korea up to right now? Has the situation deteriorated when it comes to U.S. interests, which really are Korean, Japanese, and U.S. interests in the region? Does Xi Jinping keep North Korea ready at a moment's notice to cause trouble, to throw the international community off balance? What's going on?
First of all, on their missile program and their nuclear weapons program, those are proceeding. And, you know, the North Koreans will fire off intercontinental ballistic missiles. Those are violations of UN Security Council resolutions. And we complain about it. Over the last one, we called the Security Council meeting. We don't do anything. So this really is this is the United States. We are not vigorously enforcing our sanctions against North Korea. And more important, we're not enforcing our sanctions against China and Russia, which is busting those sanctions. You know, North Korea relies on export sales. That means that they're getting dollars. Chinese banks are laundering those dollars through our financial system, Buck. We know about this. And we do nothing to stop China from doing that. So this is shame on us, because we didn't allow Pablo Escobar to run money through New York, but we're allowing the Chinese to do so. Inside North Korea right now, they don't have a famine like they did in the middle of the 1990s, but there is a severe shortage of food. They didn't recover very well from COVID. There's a lot that we do not know. But basically, Kim Jong-un is able to survive, and we could affect that situation, but we've decided not to do so. Because after the outreach of diplomacy during the Trump administration, Biden has gone back to a policy you could generally call strategic patience, which is basically ignoring the North Koreans.
Gordon, how is China doing with regard to COVID right now? I know that they've had obviously the most extreme lockdowns of any country in the world, stretching back for a long time. But I think people were pretty surprised in this country to hear that China was still having extreme lockdowns, well, as of the last 6 months. What's going on?
Yeah, China had a zero COVID policy, which was a policy meant to prevent any transmission of the disease. And it was, as you say, the most extreme set of disease control measures anywhere, or maybe anywhere outside of North Korea. It's not entirely clear. But the point is that they had these large quarantine camps, daily testing, all the rest of it. On December 7th, the National Health Commission in China enacted its 10-point plan, which was essentially the abandonment of zero COVID. And they let the disease rip. And even by Beijing's own estimates, about 80% of the population has now been infected by COVID, probably more. By the end of this winter, there'll be somewhere maybe 1 or 2 million deaths. We don't know. But clearly, this has been China's had its COVID epidemic in the beginning and now at the end, as we've seen in the last couple months or so. And they'll get over it because this is Omicron. It's pretty mild. But nonetheless, China was not prepared for this. And the Chinese people are pretty upset at the way that the government has handled it.
What are the chances in your mind, Gordon, that we could wake up in a week, a month, a year, and Xi Jinping is no longer the Chinese premier for reasons other than his own natural health and demise?
That's a great question. In October, at the 20th National Congress of the Communist Party, where Xi Jinping got his precedent-breaking third term as general secretary, everyone, or almost everybody, said that he was unchallenged. Since that time, Buck, we have seen reversals of his signature policies, like common prosperity, zero COVID, as we talked about, crackdowns on certain businesses. And so that has led people to believe that perhaps Xi Jinping is not as powerful or influential as he first thought. The Chinese political system has gotten more opaque, if that were possible. So there's less that we know about it. And we can only guess from these policy reversals that there's turmoil at the top of the Communist Party. Because otherwise, Xi would have been able to enforce his will and make sure that his policies were not reversed. So I think that there is a real problem that he's clearly the most powerful, but that doesn't mean he's as powerful as he once was.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of the On Purpose podcast. On Purpose is dedicated to helping you be happier, healthier, and more healed. This week, I talked to Orlando Bloom in a rare interview where we went deep into how he got comfortable with fear, navigating the changes in relationships, and how to change the guilt and shame thought pattern. This conversation shows a never-seen-before side to Orlando Bloom and his unique life journey.
I think we all struggle sometimes to really deeply believe that we are enough, that we're valued, that we're valuable. You know, we're imprinted by our parents from the age of 0 to 7, right? Mm. I'm constantly trying to go, like, how do I detach from my, from this idea of what, is that my baggage? It doesn't look like my baggage. I mean, I know, okay, that's mine. Let's unpack that.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gordon, also on the American front, if someone told you right now that they were considering traveling to China for, you know, a U.S. citizen for work or for fun, are there concerns of it? For example, right now, if someone told me, hey, Buck, I want to go to Russia. I've never seen Moscow. I want to go tour Red Square. I would say bad timing. Don't do it. Now, do I think they, on, you know, by the odds would be okay? Yeah, probably, but I certainly wouldn't tell a family member or a friend of mine, I think it's wise to go. Do you have a similar feeling about China right now, or are relations still strong enough that American businessmen can feel safe going over there and not worry they're going to get detained for some made-up reason?
It hasn't been safe for quite some time, Buck. You remember when President Trump asked Canada to detain Meng Wanzhou, who was the chief financial officer of Huawei Technologies, which is China's national champion telecom equipment provider. China just grabbed two Canadian citizens, the two Michaels, as they're called, and detained them for no reason at all. And this obviously was in retaliation for China complying with our request for the detention of Ms. Meng. Just a day or so ago, on Sunday, we learned that Bao Fan, Chinese citizen of China Renaissance, a very influential tech financier, was cooperating with authorities, is the way they always put it. He disappeared in the middle of this month, and people didn't know whether he had fled or whether he was detained. He's detained. I mean, there's just no law. So if they can do that to someone really powerful in China, they can do that to an American citizen. And I think the State Department should have an advisory on travel to China, which is more than just be careful. It should be thou shalt not go, because I think that it's not possible for us to protect American citizens who have been detained in China for any reason. So unless you're traveling on a diplomatic passport, I don't think that it's safe to go to China.
Gordon, last one for you. How is the Biden administration doing on China policy in general? What's your honest assessment? What are they getting right? What are they getting wrong? What are you worried about?
It's not been 100% awful, but they're not moving fast enough. And they're still issuing, just to give you an example, you know, they're still issuing hollow warnings on providing lethal assistance, as we talked about. That's a real problem, because let me give you just a little bit of historical analogy as to how dangerous this is. You remember England and France were issuing hollow warnings to the Third Reich in the late 1930s. And we know that in August of 1939, Britain and France told Hitler that they would declare war on Germany if Germany invaded Poland. We know from the archives that Hitler didn't believe Britain and France. He thought he could invade Poland and there would be no general war in Europe. Well, Hitler was the most surprised person in September 1939 because he invaded Poland and Britain and France actually made good on their warnings, the first time they had done so. That's our problem right now. We are the Britain and France of our decade. We've been issuing all these hollow warnings to China, Biden administration, and not following up. And we have, and this is not just Biden, this is previous presidents as well. We've taught the Chinese to ignore our warnings. And eventually the Biden administration is, for the protection of the American people, is going to have to carry through on one of them. The Chinese aren't going to believe us. This is going to get ugly. This is 1939 ugly. And so, yes, the Biden administration has done some good things, like the chip restrictions, the restrictions on selling chip-making equipment, but it's too slow. And we are now at a point where the Biden administration is not acknowledging how dangerous this world is, and it's engaging in policies that in the past have led to great tragedy.
Get the U.S., the Great U.S.-China Tech War, Gordon's latest book, also The Coming Collapse of China, and follow Gordon G. Chang on Twitter. Gordon, always enlightening. Thank you for being with us. Good to see you.
Thank you so much, Buck.
The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes. The families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.